Dennis Moynihan. I'll be speaking at the Carbondale Public Library tonight at 7 o'clock. Hope to see people there. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burford, Nate Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcock, Honey Masood.
KABU would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Please call 877-500-5266 to show your support for KABU today. Breakfast was provided by Helzer's on Alberta, serving the community since 2004, using family recipes and local ingredients. Serving breakfast every day starting at 7 a.m., located at 1538 Northeast Alberta Street. Lunch was provided by Bridges Cafe and Catering, located at 2716 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard. Committed to using local and organic ingredients, breakfast served every day, all day, and lunch on weekdays. Dinner was provided by Pambiche, a Cuban restaurant serving Cuban Creole cuisine and Cuban cocktails, located at 2811 Northeast Gleason, open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week.
Hi, I'm Bob McChesney. This is KBOO Radio.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Our frequencies are 90.7 FM Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge. That's K220HR Hood River. 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis. Also heard on K282BH Philomath. Stay tuned for Positively Revolting Talk Radio right after this.
Hi, I'm Bob McChesney. This is KBOO.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time.
Good morning. Good morning. It is just about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to KBOO. your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are Positively Revolting, and we hope you are too. This morning, we are very happy to have a chance to speak with Todd Wolfson. Todd is a sociocultural anthropologist. He's a community organizer, and he's an assistant professor of journalism and media studies at Rutgers. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here and for writing your new book, Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left, which is a very academic treatment of the new ways in which technology and media and movements are sort of influencing each other and developing a historical look at this. And so let's start with that, the beginning of this history. If we could, excuse me, let's start there. What are the hallmarks of the cyber left? What distinguishes this era of the struggle from what came before?
Yeah, I mean, what distinguishes it most directly is what I call a logic of horizontality. So in all the aspects of contemporary organizing, and again, I want to mark, this is a generalization. So there are certainly counter examples you can find, but the general trend of contemporary organizing and what I call the cyber left is an attempt to fight entrenched forms of power, hierarchy, and bureaucracy. And that's the core organizing logic. And so we see it in most of the forms of different organizing, an attempt towards direct forms of democracy and consensus decision making, an attempt to build organizational infrastructure that's flat with no hierarchy, an attempt to not have one particular part of the struggle, whether it's a class struggle against white supremacy and structural racism, the struggle against patriarchy. No particular part of the struggle is in the lead, but all of these are meant to be knit together. So there's a flattening out of struggle and an attempt to create less hierarchy in that. So in each of these ways and in many other ways, there's this real attempt to create a flatness across social movements.
You point to the Zapatista uprising as sort of a departure point. Can you talk about how the principles of Zapatista organizing and these new principles in sort of all are of a piece? Can you explore that a little bit?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm sure all your listeners know, but the Zapatistas rose up on the day the North American Free Trade Agreement went into effect across North America. They made the argument that this free trade agreement was going to be a death knell to farmers in Chiapas, the southernmost state of Mexico, which is also one of the most resource-rich but poorest states. And they rose up, and it was actually the beginning of the rebellion was like had some of the hallmarks of a classic Marxist, land-based rebellion. But as both in the preparation for that rebellion and also in the actual struggle with the Mexican government, they shifted strategy quite a few times. And some of the shifting of strategy that they did and some of the answers that they came up with became sort of not, I wouldn't say orthodoxy, but some of the principles that then merged with the cyber, like North American organizing following that. So in particular, they organized themselves once they won land autonomy after the initial uprising, they organized themselves into networks, network communities. They were very savvy in their use of media, both legacy media. So they took over a bunch of radio stations when they had their first uprising, but they also used and had their supporters used the internet in very important and breakthrough ways. And it was just at the time that the internet was coming into public consciousness. It was 1994. And they also had kind of a merge between a hierarchical military organization, but also a direct democracy in all serious decision makings, which comes out of a long Mayan tradition. So many of these ideas from the direct democracy, which also has a history that connects to the new left, of course, and the way they used media, et cetera, became hallmarks of what global social justice movement activists then kind of started to configure around in the years to follow.
I think that actually looking at what happens in the years to follow is where we'll go next. But at this moment, I would love to talk with Grace and with Teresa about our goals this morning in terms of fundraising for KBOO Community Radio, for raising membership, looking for new members, looking for membership renewals. And, you know, if you have a couple extra bucks, throw it our way as we are here in our winter membership drive. Teresa, Grace, how are we doing?
We're doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
We're doing great. Yeah.
Yeah, the money's coming in, and so, you know, things are happening, and it's time for you to join the thousands who support KBOO Radio by calling 877-500-5266. We're talking about this book, Digital Rebellion. You can have it in your hands by pledging $7.50 per month, calling 877-500-5266. Now, I'd like to suggest to you, those of you in Hood River and Salem and Corvallis, Eugene, and Albany to call in now at 877-500-5266 because it's time for you to represent. And we've gotten some calls in, haven't we?
We have gotten some calls. So we want to thank Ted from Tigard, Stephanie from Oregon City, Bill from Portland, Amy from Battleground, Leslie from Mount Hood, Tabor from Portland, Lori from Battleground, two Battleground callers. That's great.
Yeah.
Linda from Clackamas. Woohoo! So, you know, Teresa is calling out these names, and people are calling. So I'd say keep calling out those names of towns, Teresa, because we're getting the calls.
We challenge you.
We challenge you, people from Mount Hood. We challenge you from Hood River.
Well, there's a reason we have our translators and why we push out 25,000 watts, and that's so that we can reach you right now. It's not an incidental thing, not an accident that you can hear us in McMinnville. And so that's why you need to call, because you're part of our community, 877-500-5266.
And guess what? We still have the matching grant going. So we have a very generous member who called up and wanted to give an anonymous matching grant of $1,000. So your money that you call in today will be doubled in its impact. So this is a fabulous time to call. You can call in and get that book. You can get the book, The Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left. You can become a member. You can
need to contribute to get that book, Grace?
Yeah, you can double your impact. And 877-500-5266.
And it's the last Friday to contribute to Positively Revolting in this membership drive, right, folks?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay,
now's
so
your chance. Don't let it get away.
That's $7.50 a month to get the book, and I've heard that it is quite a thick book, and it's sort of like chocolate cake. You don't eat the whole cake at once, and you don't read this book all at once. It's thick stuff, and it's a good adjunct to what you're hearing on KBOO Radio. So call in right now. That's $7.50 a month. That makes it a $90 a year pledge, which is double, which means you will be giving us $180 per year, plus you will get your hands on the book, Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left.
877-500-5266. Online, you can give at kboo.fm. We want your participation in community radio, because your participation is what allows us to continue our independence. We have been independent community radio for 46 years, and with your help, your participation, your solidarity, your membership at 877-500-5266, you will, in fact, allow this resource to continue for another 46 years and beyond. Thank you very much, Grace. Thank you very much, Teresa.
Yeah, bet.
We'll be back.
You betcha. We'll be back.
And thank you very much, Todd, for being there.
Thank you.
Okay, good.
All right.
So we were talking
live radio. It's fun.
We were talking just before we invited Grace and Teresa on about what does develop out of this sort of new way of interacting with media. First of all, the implications for the Zapatistas in being able to garner global support for what would have, I'm going to go ahead and imagine, prior to the internet age, gone fairly unnoticed outside of the immediate area. That is not exactly an area that a lot of news comes from, Chiapas or southern Mexico, at all. And especially before the age of the internet, getting information to and from these areas was really kind of challenging. So the implications for building, bringing together awareness and building global solidarity are enormous in that case.
Absolutely. And first, I need to say that definitely the most wonderful comparison from a book I've ever heard is like it being like chocolate cake. I am so pleased, and I will say that over and over
again. You steal that, Todd. You go right ahead.
Teresa will be thrilled.
So the Zapatistas, yes, they used, and it wasn't just them, it was supporters of the Zapatistas who were able to use the internet in really, really interesting ways during what I didn't finish saying was that they had an uprising. They took over the capital of Chiapas and many small towns. They tried to call the rest of the poor of the country to rise up with them. That call didn't work. And so they were somewhat isolated. And maybe they had misinterpreted the mood of the country. I mean, people were suffering, of course, but maybe they had misinterpreted people's readiness to move with them. I'm not sure, but whatever the case may be, they became quite isolated, and the Mexican government, as one would imagine when there's an uprising, responded with quite a bit of ferocity, fueled by U.S., you know, U.S. weapons and U.S. military support. And the Zapatistas, in the moment of isolation, they tried to retreat into the mountains of Chiapas instead of having... That would have wiped out a lot of people. And the Mexican military's plan was to follow them and to, you know, end the insurgency for
right.
good.
Well,
I
remember from that time, because the Zapatistas I always found to be an extremely pivotal movement. At that time, I remember a Chase Manhattan memo that got surfaced that said, you know, to the Mexican government, we expect you to take care of the Zapatista problem.
Exactly, right. And so it's global capital has interests here because this is connected to NAFTA, whatever.
Yeah.
And so they, in there, they recognize that they have to change strategy. And that's when they try to retreat into the mountains. And that's also when these internet networks become really well harnessed. So a bunch of, and this isn't the Zapatistas alone. And of course, Subcomandante Marcos emerges in this moment as a very charismatic figure who speaks to the press, who's on radio programs, who puts out communiques, and not just him, but the Zapatistas all together put out communiques. But he becomes like a star spokesperson. And then these new internet networks start to wake from the, you know, 30-year slumber where they were gestating, and it starts to get used. And these networks, these internet networks developed because people were trying to build energy to challenge NAFTA and also for other human rights concerns in South America, Central America, Mexico. And so activists begin to use these networks to call and demand a ceasefire. But what happens is that activists from America, Canada, and Mexico storm Mexico City and also Chiapas, and they put themselves on the line. And that ends up forcing the Mexican government's hand to allow a peace accord. And in that peace accord, they do come up with certain rights, and one of the rights the Zapatistas win is autonomy in certain parts of their land of Chiapas to look after their community in ways that make sense. But what? Okay, go ahead, please.
Oh no, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say what then becomes interesting is in the year or two following that, the Zapatistas make these calls to both a national and global network, and that's when the ideas that they started coming up with and thinking through in Mexico start to become both ideas across North America and even globally, ideas that begin to emerge.
And didn't they also very much influence folks in the Battle of Seattle in the World
yes.
Trade?
So exactly.
Takeover.
And that's exactly where I was wanting to go next. As that saw the next significant development in new media, as well as the birth of indie media happened about that time.
Yeah, it happens actually. The planning is in the run-up to the Seattle WTO protests in November 99, but it goes online on the eve of the WTO protests. And basically what happens is, and this is a sort of interesting story, so a bunch of media activists and community media leaders, people like Dede Halleck, who started Paper Tiger TV, are pulling together a conference in New York City in the summer, I believe, of 96 or 97, I believe, called Free the Media. And they're trying to think through who should be the plenary speaker. And the plenary, they end up deciding to ask Subcomandante Marcos to make a plenary address by video. And he does. And in that plenary address, he puts out this call to create two things. One, an international network to struggle against neoliberalism, but then also an international communication network that basically takes advantage of all these new technologies and links struggles together across space and across theme. And many of the founders or eventual organizers of Indie Media were in that room that day. And so there is actually this really direct connection because they took that idea up. And, you know, maybe a year later, there's an announcement, or a year and a half later, there's an announcement that the WTO third ministerial meetings are going to be held in Seattle. And people start to get together and they take these words and they make them flesh in Seattle, so to speak.
I think you could say that, yeah. And so in that, again, we saw the principles of decentralized organizing. We saw principles of horizontality. And we also saw that things were not absolutely left to the internets, as Indie Media had print publications. Indie Media also, there was some pirate radio, not necessarily Indie Media, but different folks, as well as community radio involvement. And so we saw sort of a bringing together of multi modes of media to make sure word spread throughout many different communities that were being affected by WTO policy. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they built, I mean, today, even today, you could look at what they built in Seattle, and it's jaw-dropping and awe-inspiring. I mean, they organized for probably about 6 months in the run-up to the WTO protests. And what you said is, it's precisely right. It was a beautiful multimedia project. They had a daily newspaper called The Grind that they printed. They had pirate radio broadcasting on the FM dial throughout the entire WTO protests. They had a video team that put together a daily 30-minute documentary, which was shot by hundreds of hands and edited by dozens of people that they uplinked by satellite radio, and broadcast, and groups would take it down and broadcast it in different parts of the country. And then they also had a website, which was open publishing. So it was this idea that we are now so used to, but it was really one of the very first times the internet was used this way, where, you know, if you were a community journalist or an activist or just a concerned citizen in Seattle during the WTO protests, you could publish what you were thinking or put up a picture, and there was a direct instantaneous, you would see it online. And this was a brand new idea in 1999, and it blossomed. So it was a really multimedia, big multimedia project. They gave out 400 press passes during the week of the WTO protests. And one of the founders was talking to a New York Times journalist. And this symbolizes some of the tension between legacy media and social media. Like, and he said to the founder, the New York Times journalist said to the founder, "Look, I knew where to find a story by looking for the bright green Indie Media press passes, because when there was a glut of those press passes, I knew that there was going to be an important story breaking in the WTO protests." So what they created was a really powerful multimedia project that started in Seattle, was built on a vision that was put out both by Subcomandante Marcos and by a series of media activist projects across the U.S. and the globe in the 1990s. And it blossomed there, and it grew quite big from there.
All right, and that, I think, is going to be a place where we will
take a
ask
break.
Teresa and Grace to come back with us. We are at this rather inspiring moment in looking at our history as independent media coming together in the, how do we say,
building of a movement in actually making sure that movement takes some sort of form and blossoming and that we know what we're doing. And KABU also plays an important role in things just like that. In fact, I was there in Seattle as a KABU reporter, I recall.
I was going to say KABU was there.
In force, as it were. Mm-hmm. So tell folks how they can support this radio station that actually is a part of some of this legacy.
You can call 877-500-5266, right, Grace?
That's right. Or you can go online to kboo.fm and hit that little tip jar on the top right side. But the main thing is to call. If you call right now, we still have some books for The Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left, and we have copies of that. So you can get that for a $90 minimum pledge. What does that work out to? About $7.50 a month.
$7.50 a month.
Which is a great deal. It's a great way to support KABU. Plus, you get that amount doubled in impact because we have the matching grant going still. So it's a real win-win situation. You get the book. You get to become a member of this fabulous radio station. You became a radio activist. And then you can go downtown to the anti-divestiture rally at City Hall at noon.
Or you could refuse to do that.
But yeah.
But whatever you're doing,
become a KABU member. Become a KABU member. That is so important.
And don't let this matching funds opportunity pass you by.
Absolutely.
If you've been waiting, if you've been thinking, oh, maybe I'm going to join one, it's the time. This is it. This is the time to do it.
Well, you know, we're really excited because this is our semi-annual News and Public Affairs Day, and I don't know about you, but I keep it on the air all day listening to this because we get the best talks, speeches, and interviews, all produced by our volunteers and staff. And the theme for the day is resistance to tyranny. Isn't this great? That is just a great theme. And it's the last day to support our KABU News and Public Affairs Radio during this drive. So make that call now, 877-500-5266. And then you can kind of settle in and listen to Chris Hedges on Empire and Capitalism, or Eric McDavid, who's a newly released prisoner, or Winona Duke, who's, you know, this amazing Native American activist. You know, just lots and lots of stuff going on today, all the way until 8 p.m. tonight.
Now, seriously, there are thousands of KBOO supporters right now who are listening and waiting to hear that phone ring. I mean, that's not a recording. When you hear the ring, that's an actual ring. And that's you calling in and joining them. And I know that they're all waiting for you to join them, because that's how I feel as a supporter when I'm listening to Membership Drive, and we're calling out to you and hoping that you'll call in. And the number to call is 877-500-5266. And
can people come to the station too?
People can come right down here to 20 Southeast 8th. That's just to the east of the Burnside Bridge, just off Burnside Street. Very easy to find, and we'll give you a little tour of the station. We love doing that. You can also join online, of course, at kboo.fm, and you'll see the little spot to the tip jar on the upper right. But the number to call is 877-500-KABU, 877-500-5266. I particularly like to ask right now those of you in Hillsboro, represent, call in.
That's right.
We're broadcasting to you for a reason. Beaverton, call in right now, 877-500-5266. Haven't gotten a call from Salem yet this morning. Come on, Salem. 877-500-5266.
Corvallis should be calling, don't you think?
Battleground is beating everybody out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's all about Battleground today. So, and we love you, Battleground, but we want to hear from other folks, too.
This is your chance.
877-500-5266. Thank you. I hear the phone ringing right now.
Yeah, that's happening. 877-500-5266. And as we've been saying, this is the Friday the 13th that we want to make very unlucky for corporate domination by giving out the news you're not supposed to know. I've heard that somewhere. Or positively revolting attitudes. That's how you support us. You call us 877-500-5266, and you do it right now. And if you're employed, if you're doing all right, then ask yourself, don't you think that you can spare $7.50 a month and get yourself that book, or even $5 a month. We'll get you a Greg Palast book. We have that for you, and other books. 877-500-5266. And, of course, at $20 a month, you can get the KABU hoodie that you've probably seen around town with a wonderful graphic on it. It's black. It's got attitude. And it's $20 a month here at KBOO, 877-552-66. Every person you see wearing that hoodie is supporting us at least that level.
Absolutely. And you know that. And you know that you know you need a hoodie for the spring.
And you know you need community radio. You know you need cable. You know you need independent media. And you need to be an active supporting part of it. Because, in fact, you are not separate from the struggle. You are a part of the struggle. And you are already joined us with your hearts, with your minds. It is really time to financially support us. 877-500-5266. Independent with you, right? Interdependent. And it takes all of us working together to make independent media and community radio happen. Grace and Teresa will check back with you on who to thank there in just a few, but I trust more of you will be calling right now. 877-500-5266. This is your morning to support KBOO Community Radio. This is the beginning of our News and Public Affairs Day, one of those my favorite days of the year.
Oh, yeah.
As we get to focus on resistance, and that is always a theme here at KBOO, as we actually right there in our program charter talk about our inherent values of being those that support peace, justice, democracy, human rights, environmentalism, multiculturalism, freedom of expression, and social change. That's right, social change is a part of our program charter. So you can be a part of that by calling 877-500-5266.
Absolutely. So Todd, horizontality, am I?
Horizontality.
I'm having a hard time pronouncing that, but you know what I'm talking about. This seems to be a concept that standard media just doesn't understand. It has been said, and I heard in an interview that you were doing, one time, this guy wanted to know why the Tea Party had made such, was it because they were using standard political tactics, that they were making so much more headway into the traditional political system than the Occupy movement. And to me, the Occupy movement is pretty much anti-capitalist, and that's not where they want to go anyway. And I don't even, you know, how do you feel about, I don't even get the correlation there, but they keep trying to talk about lack of leadership in that way, and that just doesn't make sense. Do you have some light on that issue?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, since I put out this book, a lot of people have wanted to ask about the relationship between, for instance, Occupy and the Tea Party. And I mean, obviously, people who have a certain perspective on the world want to look at a right trajectory movement and a left trajectory movement and try to make blanket comparisons to them. But they are a cut of a very, very different cloth. One, it seems to me, was heavily funded by the Koch brothers and by other entities. And
because they were. That's why it seems to you.
and that enables them to get a lot of attention. And also, they don't have the same questions about hierarchy and movements that the Occupy movement tried to embody in its work. And so the ability to make clean cut sort of arguments or intersect in U.S. elections in a much more direct way, I think is a matter of what sort of beast it is, which is just a completely different social formation than what Occupy was. The one thing I would say, though, which I think is true and often not, or has elements of truth to it, is that I felt like the Tea Party, and please push back, I don't know how it looked in Portland, but from my vantage on the in the Northeast, it felt like in certain moments it was an expression of working class, largely white communities, mm-hmm. responding to the economic crisis, mm-hmm. but in ways I didn't agree with. But their suffering was still there, and that was hard for me to think through and understand. And I thought Occupy, obviously, is also people responding to the economic crisis and suffering, but from a very different vantage.
Exactly so. And I would have to agree with that analysis. I think that, those that are suffering, it kind of came down to who you were going to blame for it. Were you going to blame other people who were suffering and sort of do that horizontal hostility? Or were you actually going to try to find that root cause?
Right.
Yeah,
and I, that's how I saw it, and also they were led by the nose. I mean,
sure.
Fox News through a series of processes, and this is a problem I think also the left has to negotiate and sort of progressive movements that we want to see lift up is that we don't have as many institutions on the ground in communities throughout the country as some of the rightward trajectory that connects to the working class that's white in this country in a particular way does, i.e. some parts of the church, not all, for sure, God. So since we don't, and of course, talk radio that's not positively revolting, but the other part of talk radio,
yes,
which is positively revolting in a different way.
That's absolutely revolting. I don't know anything positive about it.
Fox News. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think it reached a very difficult conditions because...
Well, it leads to conditions like... Get the government out of my Social Security.
Right.
You know, exactly. Statements like that.
Right, which don't make sense and don't connect to what we would say the real economic problem is, which, you know, or at least I would, you know, which had to do with, you know, unchecked capitalist greed, not lack of regulation, and lack of democracy that enabled a certain set of principles to rise to the top and then screw us all because they didn't know what they were doing and the genie was let out of the bottle. But for the Occupy movement, the pivot was, there's a real problem here. There's a real problem in the economic system. I'm a student and I'm going to carry student debt for the rest of my life. But this bank over here is not being held to account for its failures. And that's a real problem. And that, was a very, you know, wonderful vision, but also very different than the Tea Party.
Absolutely. We did this jump of about 11 years there. And one other point I really wanted to look at in terms of history is what happened with Indy Media and Oaxaca and Brad Wills. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the development of Indy Media and global solidarity work and how ultimately this tragedy of the murder of Brad Wills came into?
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing I would say is that it's important to note following Seattle that there was Seattle was the height of the global social justice movement writ large because if we look back, it was such an amazing event. They shut the WTO meetings down.
Yeah.
The Seattle police had to set curfew. President Clinton, who had been backing blanket free trade, was forced to walk back his positions, and the WTO was never able to ratify an agreement. And that was to a large part because of the power of the organizing that led to the Seattle protests and also Indy Media. And what happened from there with Indy Media is the global social justice movement had a sort of protest circuit that sort of was developing. There's a World Bank meeting in D.C., let's protest it. And while there was preparation for protesting, there was also the building of an independent media center in D.C. There's going to be a Republican National Convention in my home city, Philadelphia, in the summer of 2000. We're going to prepare. We're going to build an independent media center, and we're also going to prepare for these protests. The same with Los Angeles, you know, a month later for the Democratic National Convention. And so independent media centers started developing along this protest circuit in a really exciting way. There was a lot of energy and attention. They became somewhat powerful. I live in Philadelphia, and the Philadelphia Independent Media Center was really powerful growing out of the Republican National Convention of 2000. But it went beyond the global social justice movement, and it just hit this tipping point where people just got really excited by what we all now know as like the social media moment, but that this was like the front edge of it. And so independent media centers started burgeoning up everywhere. In Indy Media's height of growth, there was a new independent media center once every 10 days. And it was global in its projection. It was in every continent. They were producing news in 30 languages and in every medium. So it wasn't just internet, although certainly the internet was critical. So it went through this massive explosion. And in its height around 2004, 2005, there was something like 200 independent media centers around the world. And from my research, I think it is for sure the largest non-state, non-corporate alternative media network that, you know, existed, at least at the time. And that runs us into the story with Brad Will and Oaxaca. Brad was a really central media figure. He was a videographer by and large, and he was largely based in New York, though he had traveled to South and Central America a lot to do a lot of video projects. And he went down to Oaxaca during the Oaxaca uprisings in the fall of 2006. And I think if you look at Brad, he captured a certain ethos of the movement. He was a global humanitarian. He believed in solidarity action, and he also believed in merging the vision of political justice with being an artist in really thoughtful ways. And he was also, and this is important, and we can talk about this maybe more later, he was also characterized some of the demographics of what, you know, led Indie Media, which is he was white, he was college educated and middle class, and this became a lot of the demographic, not absolutely, but a strong part of the demographic of Indie Media, which is something we need to think through and look at more closely. But that said, he went to Oaxaca to cover the Oaxacan uprisings that started as a teacher uprising and became a whole community and revolt in the fall of 2006. And he was covering it both through writing for both the Mexico City Independent Media Center and the New York Independent Media Center, and also capturing video. And about two or three days after he got there, he was really tall and lanky and sort of the sort of person who would stand out in Oaxaca City. And two or three days after he got there, there was a paramilitary radio station that said, if you see a gringo with a camera, shoot him, over and over again. And in one of the struggles at the Oaxaca City, or a town outside of Oaxaca City, actually at the barricades, that happened. Brad Will was shot. He was killed. He wasn't the only person killed in that uprising, but he was one of people killed. But one of the tragic elements of it is that Brad was filming, and he captured his own death.
Yeah.
And so there's a video, I believe it's still out there, that actually captures this moment, which was, I mean, within Oaxaca City and within the struggle between the community and what became the APPO and the governor of the state, there was a lot of death. So there was a lot of injustice and a lot of pain and suffering going on. And I don't want to localize it all in Brad because he was a white media activist who... But it was an important moment for the Indie Media movement because he was a central figure in it. And right. So he became a symbol of something for the movement, and it spurred a certain sort of action within the Indie Media movement where people were getting arrested, people were holding vigils and trying to raise money, et cetera. So it was a really critical moment for the movement.
Absolutely. There have been so many critical moments, and I want to look a little bit at where we're going next. Where do you see, first of all, actually, I came across this phrase, the switchboard of struggle in your book, The Digital Rebellion. And I think this is a good moment to sort of unpack that. What do you mean by the switchboard of struggle?
Yeah, I think there are certain problems with this logic of horizontality. I hope we can talk through.
Uh-huh.
But one of the beautiful breakthroughs is a reimagination of the role of media and communications and social struggle in what could be a really good way, but also can have problems. And what I use switchboard of struggle as a way to kind of capture that. Another concept I use is a nervous system.
Uh-huh.
So in the previous periods of social movement organizing and left-based progressive organizing in the U.S. at the least, there was a belief that the media was an appendage of a movement. So you have an already constructed movement that's got its constituents, and whether it's the Students for a Democratic Society or even the Black Panther Party, and then you have a media arm which spits out a message to a broader populace. And so through that, you think of media as the media arm. What the Zapatistas and then Indie Media and other struggles in connection with the internet and technological transformation have reimagined is media playing more of the switchboard or nervous system role. So to keep on the kind of physiological metaphor, we could think of media less as an arm now and more as a nervous system, that it's not an already created constituent, but actually media plays a role in creating the movement by stitching it together, by bringing a struggle for domestic workers up against the struggle for cab drivers, up against the struggle for students struggling for a just education, up against the struggle for people fighting for climate justice, so that they can begin to see a reflection of themselves and their struggles and these other struggles, so that a bigger united front starts to emerge.
And so what I was trying to say in the Switchboard of Struggle is this is some of the vision of what Indie Media wanted me to do, both across space, which is why it was this global network with strong local independent media centers, but also across theme, from workers' rights to women's rights to the struggle against white supremacy and police brutality.
Okay. You know, back to the quote, lack of leadership. I've seen in movements, I mean, I'll save the Fred Hampton syndrome to start with, when there are in left-based movements, when there are leaders, horrible things tend to happen to them. So I can sort of see why people sort of don't want to get away from that.
Abby Hoffman, who said, never get identified as a leader.
Though he was.
Yeah, just saying.
So to me, there's a practicality that goes along with that, as well as it being a philosophy.
Yes, absolutely, and not just because you don't, in Abby Hoffman's terms, want to be the one that's assassinated, but also because if you're a movement that's too reliant on a single leader, and in this case, usually men, then when that person is assassinated, if they're assassinated, God forbid, then the movements have a lot of trouble moving because they were dependent on a certain set of decision-making processes and authorities and maybe charismas that are no longer there. And I think with Martin Luther King, this is really clear. I mean, he pivoted towards a poor people's campaign at the back end of his life. And that was a campaign to bring people of all races together to demand an economic bill of rights from the government. And he was killed on the eve of the Poor People's Campaign in Memphis, as we know, coming out for the sanitation workers there. And the Poor People's Campaign had a lot of trouble moving forward because I think probably for many reasons, but I think a critical reason was the death of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. So I think that's a really important lesson. But I guess what I question about the meme of leaderless movements is, I think there's another way to think about it, which is we need many Martins. We need many leaders.
Yeah.
And the problem with the meme of leaderless movements, to me, is we don't then, in our movement processes and structures, build programs to build leadership. It's not easy to take on leadership in social movement process and practice. And if you don't have programs that help people become clear, competent, connected, and committed to the struggle ahead, then people with the most social and cultural capital will take those roles up. And those people tend to be college educated, tend to be white, tend to be male. And so I think the point or the question I would raise about leaderlessness is, isn't there another way to think about this so that when we build our strategies and the programs within our movements, we make sure that we're reaching out and building with all of us so that the movements can be led by all sectors of society?
Absolutely.
And that's the question for me, not so much because I certainly agree with the concerns about a singular leader. It's problematic.
Well, and the personality of someone who wants to be a singular leader is often
problematic. But and I think we get back to the horizontality and intersectionality, actually, I think is what I was more trying for there. The intersectionality where we are looking at the importance of fighting white supremacy, of looking at the patriarchy and looking and fighting, you know, on that front as well, looking at the class issues and how all these things dovetail in a multi-leadership strategy. We can have people with expertise and experience in all of those areas coming together and creating a better understanding and solidarity and bridging in the movement overall. I want to use this moment to talk to Teresa and Grace about how we're doing this morning and your part in community radio, which starts by calling 877-500-5266.
We are getting calls into KBOO Portland, and it's a great thing. Now, this is the time to get your hands on the book that we've been talking about, Digital Rebellion, The Birth of the Cyber Left. Todd Wolfson, who you've just been listening to, begins with the rise of the Zapatistas in the mid-1990s, and you've heard what it's about, so now get the meat of it, or the tofu, if you prefer, and call in 877-500-5266. You got to wonder, How are we going to surf this revolution? Get up to speed by knowing your history, your immediate history, the Digital Rebellion, 877-500-5266. And it's great to hear Abby Hoffman's name. Abby was a KBOO supporter, and we have him on tape supporting KBOO. So if you're clear, clear, competent, connected, and committed, I believe the four C's were that Todd was mentioning there, then it's time for you to join the thousands who have already joined and who are listening right now and hoping that you will make the phone ring. 877, that's the toll-free number, 877-500, that's half of a thousand. You can remember that, 877-500-5266, the last four digits spell KBOO, so it's 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266, and Grace can tell you more.
Well, I want to thank Lori from Vancouver. See, Vancouver, yay. We're getting everyone Vancouver. From, a lot of people from Washington today. She called and said that KBOO provides facts during the news. How about that? Facts during the news. That's amazing.
We try.
And Lori is a new member, so that is wonderful. Thank you, Lori. And we want you to call right now and join Lori. And you can call
us. Are we still
us.
Matching?
We are still matching. 877-500-5266. You can double your pledge. You can double down and double your impact.
Get the book for $750.
Yeah.
$750 a month. That's $90 pledge. You can put that on a credit card or debit card. Yes, you can.
So easy.
Or you could do it in a monthly sort of sustaining way of $7.50 from your bank account to ours. However you are able to do it, please do contribute. $90, $120. I always suggest that people give an hour's wage if you can possibly work that into your budget. If you are employed, say full-time, then check it out. Can you afford an hour's wage every month to support your entire community? Because I think you probably can. 877-500-5266. Or online at kboo.fm.
You know, I want to read this letter. Somebody actually posted it up here, and I just really think it's so moving and powerful. And someone became a member, and they said, I am a writer. I earned a little more than $80 last month, but I was sitting in my car waiting for my child to be released from morning kindergarten, listening to someone talking about injustice. And it occurred to me that it's an injustice for me to rely on KBOO as much as I do and not be a contributor, even if it's not much. So this year, I pledge to work even harder at my writing so next time I can give more. And this is from a new KBOO member.
And you
so,
know you can give more brilliant. Now because we're a matching.
We're in a matching period. It really is. It's so easy to do. And you know, when you
it's
take
right
it out,
there.
When you take it out of your electronics funds transfer, it as an EFT, you don't even really notice it. You know, it's like it's out at the beginning of the month. It's really easy. And I know when someone's calling in, they're making less than $80 a month and they can still contribute. We love that. So it doesn't matter how much. What it matters is that you call and that you become a member. $5 a month, you can do a $20 low income and then go from there. But you know, it's like there's no such thing as unaffordability at KBOO.
Well, you know, and if you've been an EFT contributor for a long time, it's not a bad idea to just bump it up once in a while.
Yep.
You know, a couple freshen bucks, $5, $5 extra a month means a lot to us.
Yep.
877-500-5266, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. And as those phones are ringing, 877-500-5266, let's come back and finish up this here talk with Todd, shall we?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Teresa and Grace.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning here on Positively Revolting. It's a great conversation. I hope we can talk to you again sometime because there's actually a whole lot that we haven't covered yet, and we need to. This is how we actually talk to each other as media and as movements is pivotal to our success. And I guess, you know, we were talking about some of the challenges that we face in looking at multi-leader approach or leaderless, as some people say, approach to organizing as we insist on intersectionality at this point so that no one issue or voice dominates what is, in fact, a global movement for social justice. Where do you see us going in the future? We've been talking about history because, in fact, that's what you've written about. But where do you see us going next in terms of global struggle and the use of independent media?
Yeah, and this connects really well to the pledge drive. I think one thing that became a problem with the indie media movement was
that it became so technologically focused that it wasn't able, and this isn't true for everyone, and I think Portland IMC wasn't the case, but many of the independent media centers around the country and then around the world became increasingly detached from the local communities of which they are a part. And so as a media arm that helps create community and helps reflect back the struggles, issues, concerns of a local community, and indie media wasn't able to do that effectively. And I would argue that was largely because people put technology over organizing or community building. And the reason I'm connecting it to the fund drive is community radio is one of the most wonderful tools for doing that sort of work and staying committed and connected to community and building community through media. And as somebody who's from Philadelphia, which is a very large city with a completely covered radio dial with all sorts of awful radio and no capacity to have my voice reflected in the way that folks in Portland do, I just want to say that it's very exciting, and what you're doing is a critical part of what we need to see in the next stage of this work. And so to follow that up, what I think we need to do is reimagine media infrastructure that is local, that is connected in deep, meaningful ways, that connects the intersectionality of local struggles and in those communities brings up those struggles and leaders and has them have voices and roles and the community members in really powerful ways that could help, I think, indie media in its height and community radio and other media outlets, when they're working really well, they are a reflection of and an empowering tool for those struggles in that community. And if we can have infrastructure that does that, whether it's through the internet or through the radio waves or through print, then we can scale up from there and bring our struggles from the local to the regional, national, global in a really powerful way. I don't think that alone is the answer, because I don't think the answer is going to be embedded in how we structure a progressive media infrastructure in the U.S. and beyond. But I think it's a critical step, and it connects really well with the fund drive and the sort of work you're doing on the ground right now.
And it is all of a piece. It's true. Media strategy alone will not get us there. But without a good media strategy, the rest of the work is so much harder and so much more disconnected.
Absolutely.
So, Todd Wolfson, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting. It's been great talking with you, and hope to do it again sometime.
I hope to be back. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And also to remind people listening to Positively Revolting, you can connect with us on Facebook. We didn't actually get into Todd's ideas about social media and how it was also born of indie media and blogging. That will be a topic for our next conversation with Todd. Mm-hmm. But if you want to connect with us on Facebook, please do so. We are nearing 500 Facebook fans.
And be the 500th.
You can do it.
That's 499th.
Facebook.com/positively revolting. You can also follow us on the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. You can email us positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And you can connect with us right now by calling 877-500-5266 and show us that you're supporting our work. Show us that you're supporting community radio. Become an active member of KBOO Community Radio.
Take advantage of the matching period.
Get this book. It's a really good book. It's dense, as Teresa was saying, like the thickest of chocolate cakes, but it is for students of the left and for media, it is quite a good read. And Teresa, how are we doing?
You have 155 seconds left to get this book. And we are getting some calls in. I don't know the exact amount, but this is the time for you to call 877-500-KBOO, 877-500-5266. And Grace can tell you about the book.
Okay, well, we have this book. It's called The Digital Rebellion, Birth of the Cyber Left. And the gentleman, Todd Wolfson, was just on the air. And we have this for you for a $90 minimum pledge. And that comes to, $7.50 a month, which is really great.
Easy peasy.
It's very easy. If you do it on an electronic funds transfer.
And
it's going to be doubled. Your impact will be doubled if you call now, because we're still in the matching pledge. So give us a call right now, 877-500-5266. This book will go away in about 2 minutes. Less than 2 minutes. So
105 seconds.
105 seconds, exactly. So call right now. You do have a few more minutes, or another minute, less than a minute.
877-500-5266.
I know this is going to make me crazy. 877-500-5266. Make that call. You know, say you don't want the book. Well, we have other things, too. We've got also got the audio flash drive, which has all kinds of stuff in here from this last year, including Naomi Klein, Molly Ivins, Ken Kesey. Oh, my gosh, all kinds of great
people. But the most important
people.
Thing, Susan we're Faludi. Supporting indie media. You're supporting indie media, indie which media. Is so yeah. important.
You're supporting independent media.
Independent, yes, not indie Sorry. Media. Independent well, media. KBOO Radio. Fine. Yeah, that's absolutely. But, you know, and that is important. And that's so important because now more than ever, you know, when we look at the way that media is consolidated and constricted and confined, then we are the antidote.
Community radio left. Is media that helps tell our own stories to each other. It is right there of the people, for the people. You, as community members, can come in and learn how to be the media right now at KBOO. And you can only do that if KBOO stays alive and vibrant. And we do that with your support. 877-500-5266. Ensure your access to your community radio station. You can be the media right here, right now. And it all starts with your phone call to participate as an active member of KBOO. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And we thank you very much. We make way now for Veterans Voice.
Okay.
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Please call 877 877-